Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never, and that debt is fraud, and it's all about complete compliance to the Constitution. I can't emphasize enough that as we keep on learning, we will actually start understanding where we, you know, need to focus. The magnitude of the problem must, I mean, the faster we get there, you know, most people can see that there's just a lot of assumptions of powers. They just don't see the nuances of how perverted the government has become. Roles and responsibilities are finite within that Constitution. And I think this has kind of lent to some confusion with many people. And we've kind of covered some of this, I believe, in yesterday's conversation regarding what was going on in Wyoming. Now, I'm not going to be giving you the spoiler alert, but I think there's still some discussion that needs to be had. So, with that, welcome back, Tammy, because we're going to get into the selection and commission for the delegates that will be appointed out of each state to go to the Constitutional Convention. The reason this is so important, the reason we're going to cover this, is we have to prove to you, and you have to prove to me, how the commission that was given to the majority, there was only two states that had any, you know, side, you know, hey, make sure you don't do this. Only two out of the 13 states had some semblance of, hey, make sure you don't do this. Everybody else had pretty much carte blanche, go do what you think is best. We trust you. Ergo, we will. That's why we want to basically put the end to any rancor and rhetoric. Because this is the time of year, by the way, isn't it, Tammy? This is when the state legislatures get descended upon by lobbyists to convene a convention or not to convene a convention, like it's a binary matter. Mm-hmm. And so the arguments that come out, and I'm not standing up for a constitutional convention. To be clear, the whole conversation is a waste of time. The convention is not the process for going after overreach. The convention is not the process, nor is the court the process for going for overreach, which I believe is one of the reasons why, you know, people have a hard time understanding, you know, these roles of our government, the three branches of government, the separations of power. So, Tammy, go ahead, because I know we got to go back, which is fine. I really I need your help to be better in conveying this information, because if you are still confused, which understandably so, and I can see, I already know some things I need to say, because, you know, people don't understand these roles. People do not understand the role. So let me let you go ahead and, you know, give me the challenge, and I will try to climb that hill.
Okay, so let me see if I can remember how I asked you, but what I'm trying to understand is what you're saying in the last episode. So in the case of Wyoming, who made a law, the Right to Life Act, you're saying that that's not constitutional because it's not in the Wyoming state constitution, and that if somebody challenged the law that they passed, they would take it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court should have said, hey, Wyoming, that's not in your state law constitution, so that's not a law that you can pass unless you go change your constitution. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes. Okay. So, to be clear, in the Constitution, for them to regulate, and this is what, we don't want them to do this. We don't want to give the state the power to regulate and determine what is life, what isn't life. Because then they can actually go down the path of, you know, because like we did in America before, if you didn't know, they actually terminated life in America for those people who were mentally retarded. They started killing people that, you know, couldn't be function normally. Institutions were being cleared as they euthanized people or they sterilized them. Not sure if you knew that. And so this is where Germany got the idea of eugenics. It was from America, good old America. And as a matter of fact, Governor Wilson of New Jersey was the one that I think signed. This was where the premise actually went down this path of saying, hey, and I, you know, as far as extinguishing life, I think that may have been more of, you know, case by case, because it was grabbed as the very first act of putting people down in Germany as a government act. What Governor Wilson did was he signed the Sterilization Act of all people who were in had mental problems, mental challenges. In other words, they wanted to make sure that they couldn't have babies. And they actually went down and they created that law. They don't have the authority to make those decisions. And in the state constitution, the word health shows up 14 times. In section 38 that you were talking about, it shows up, let me see here, a total of six times. And then it gets down into, let me see here, this is Article 3, Section, what is this? Section 52, and it becomes, let me see here, subsection G, and it basically says the referendum shall not be applied to, this is a part of a referendum, I guess, dedicated to revenues or appropriations to local or special legislations or to laws necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, and safety. So that's the context of the seventh usage of health. Article 7, education, state institutions, promotion of health, and so it's right there in the title of Article 7, and in Article 7, Section 20, the duty of the legislature is to protect and promote health and morality of the people. Promote and protect the morality of the people. So technically, you could make pornography illegal because you now have the ability to create law to because you can promote health. See, health's ambiguous and the promotion of health is ambiguous. But to protect and promote health and the morality, I believe you could basically say the protecting the morality of the people and promoting the morality of the people, making all pornography illegal in the state of Wyoming would actually be well within the interpretation of protecting and promoting health and morality. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But protecting health does not actually go into even something further. It does not imply determining whether a life can be extinguished or not extinguished, right? So going a little bit further, as the health and morality of the people are essential to their well-being and the peace and permanence of the state, it shall be the duty of the legislature to protect and promote these vital interests by such measures as it, so in other words, they can't necessarily make abortion illegal, but they can make it unfunded. They don't have to fund it because they can't make it legal either. Because if they fund it, it has to be legal. But because they can't be in it, they can't actually spend any money regarding that. But let's keep going on the next instance of health. The next instance is in Article 10, Section 4. Any section of this Constitution, to the contrary, notwithstanding any civil action, where a person alleges that a health care provider's act or omission in the provision of health care resulted in death or injury, the legislature may, by general law, then this is a sub part of this, mandate alternative dispute resolution or review by medical review panel. In other words, does this go into the court? No, this goes actually to the legislature for them to review and actually create the law necessary And as it says here, dispute resolution or review by medical review panel before the filing of a civil action against the health provider. So it's kind of like a little clause that says, we're going to mediate before you can just sue your doctor. Okay? That, at least that's how I see that. And then the 14th, because that was the 13th use. So the 14th use is actually down in the index. So that's how little power has been delegated to the state legislature. And actually, when you really look at medical, I think let's look up for the word medical. Medic. Okay, so they have one case of medic, M-E-D-I-C, you know, just trying to keep it as short as possible to include medicine or anything like that. And the medic, let me actually... Yeah, there's only one use of the word medic, M-E-D-I-C, and that is in Article 10, Section 4. And it's a mandate alternative dispute review of a medical review. It's basically what I just read. That's it. So medicine, medical care, and health, when you start looking at what has been delegated in the state constitution, it seems to me that the state of Wyoming wants to ensure people are to be free to make their own choices, that adults can make their own choices. That's it. And that means that they pay for it or they get an insurance coverage that will pay for it. But even though an insurance company, like, let's say, Aetna, you know, they're probably a pretty immoral company, they'll pay for an abortion. So maybe Aetna will pay for it. But that doesn't mean the provider has to perform it. Does that make sense?
Right. So they're not passing a law that you that abortion is good or bad.
Okay. So
you can do it or you can't do it.
Let me help this way. There are three branches of government. Each branch has a very specified role. More importantly, the judiciary has a very limited role. Its function is to ensure justice is provided in the case of a contest or controversy between two parties. That's their purpose of existence. They are not an active player in the law. In other words, they have no responsibility, no power to run around the halls of government and say, hey, let's look at that law, like they're doing in every state house by having lawyers reviewing the law to determine if it fits within their statutes and color of law. What the only thing that should be happening with law going into a state house is the law within the parameters of the state and federal constitutions. That's the only thing they need to make sure of. Because I'm telling you right now, the reason that they don't do that is because all these laws regarding energy, all these laws regarding the environment, labor, the minimum wage in the state of Wyoming would never have been able to go into the state legislature's floor to vote on or in committee, period. The committee to ensure constitutional compliance would revoke, and as a matter of fact, should chastise any lawmaker that tries to bring in a bill that would be violating the Constitution. They are to police themselves. The court has no authority or ability to oversee and determine whether they like a law or not. This is a Republican form of government, not a judiciary oligarchy, where they get to decide everything. Their case, again, is to ensure justice is served between a controversy between two parties. They have no power, negative or positive, regarding a law. They can't say this law is unconstitutional. This is the same for the federal courts. The federal courts has jurisdiction over certain types of laws, but they're still confined to the case itself. There's been no power granted to that federal court to run up and down the halls, you know, up and down Pennsylvania Avenue and going into the White House and going into the Capitol building and saying, hey, these laws violate our ethics, our morals, whatever. They have no ability to do that. their job.
Yeah, see, that's the confusing part, is because it's been so ingrained into us that they do have the authority to do that.
And where did that come from? Where did this idea that the judiciary has the ability to ensure that the law will be, uniformly understood and uniformly applied across all the states? Where did this idea that the federal judiciary could interpret the law and, in essence, be able to redefine the law and, in essence, actually create new law or actually strike down law? Where did these concepts of implied powers come from? It didn't come from the Constitution, nor did it come from the ratification base. As a matter of fact, the concept of implied powers regarding the judiciary being able to do these things, had those been brought up, they would have been quickly dismissed as, if that's the case, we will reject this Constitution.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that, reading that.
Okay. So in other words, the judiciary, and this is one of the reasons why, folks, John Jay was asked by President Washington prior to Washington's retirement, because John Jay had to leave the court to go serve the Union in trying to create a treaty over the Mississippi, and he failed, and it was an embarrassing failure. So he went back to New York, and after he was, he licked his wounds and kind of, okay, I'm feeling a little better. Washington noticed, okay, the guy's, coming out of his shell, the shell shock is over, whatever. Washington offered him, a return seat to the judiciary to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And John Jay said, no, thank you. That is a very passive court. We really have no roles. We have no powers. It is just, we're just sitting there determining the outcome between one controversy to the next. That those few things that we have power for are those few things we have jurisdiction over. Remember, even their jurisdiction is limited. As a matter of fact, when I look at the Wyoming Constitution and I type common law, which is the legal system of the state. The people have a right to common law for their justice. And bottom line, if they don't have jurisdiction over common law and they identify jurisdiction over criminal law or over this or over this or over this, then they only have jurisdiction over those things stipulated. They do not have the general power over common law. Which means that the people still have, because like property or those, and you really have to dig into, how they did this. But the reason this became a problem is because people didn't understand that you had to delegate the power to the state. This became, to me, as I see this, a protection. And because of this lack of understanding, the divine hand of providence actually gave us this level of protection, because that means that your state government doesn't have the power over all types of laws and cases. They only have the authority, the delegated authority, over those things enumerated. So when you look at the role of the court, you actually have to go and look at what its jurisdiction is. It's identified right there in your Constitution. And it doesn't say they have jurisdiction over common law. What do they have jurisdiction over? You have to read it. But I can tell you, in the state of Washington, they don't have the jurisdiction over, common law and those types of things of common law. Marriage is a common law thing. They don't have jurisdiction over marriage in the state of Washington, and yet they have family court. They don't have jurisdiction over family. Those things would be common law courts where people could seek justice from one family to the next, or disputes, what have you. Folks, we have constitutions that delegate power. And when you really read these jurisdictions, you're going to find that there's no language in your state court, at least I'm betting, because I've yet to see it. I've yet to see that the people weren't that stupid in a constitutional convention to say, our courts still have general jurisdiction over all things. Wow, that just opens up everything. They didn't grant them that. They granted him jurisdiction over these types of cases, this type of law, so forth, like admiralty law or what have you, as necessary, if you're a coastal court, what have you, or the maritime law, and those types of things. So bottom line, as we look at your constitution, we can actually see what your state and the three branches of government have been delegated the power to do. And you're going to find that they don't have the power that they're exercising. They're assuming, and they're all kind of, and this is kind of interesting how they create this little conflict between the state legislature and the court. Hey, you can't do that. Well, actually, the state legislature should quickly reel them in and say, you have no authority to say that. And though and this is where the state legislature goes, you know what? Mea culpa, our bad. We shouldn't have done this because we don't have the delegated authority, which, by the way, court, you didn't point out. You just said it was unconstitutional, that this is a constitutional right, and you're wrong, and you don't have the ability to just say that over a law created. You only have the authority to provide justice between two parties. You don't have any cognitive authority to tell us what our job is. That's not delegated to you. So go back and work within the parameters of those things delegated to you. Now, as we start really, when all of a sudden people really start saying, technically, what do you have the authority to do? And start holding them to those things, then you're going to see your government actually, they don't want to have this conversation. Your legislature's trying to avoid the conversation. Yeah. Your courts and your governor, they don't want people to realize what little power they have. That's why they never go there. And they let these people play these games, you know, okay, we got slapped down here. And the legislature, actually, they have all the power. They are the ones that create law. They're the ones that regulate the courts. And they can even reel in the governor. They have the power.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So
that's the thing. None of them seem to know that. None of them.
That's because the courts have been actually bamboozling them to say all things must come through us.
Yeah.
And this is where they go, hold on here. Where is that stated in the Constitution? So the sooner the state legislature, this is one of the reasons why the judiciary, you know, we have a problem in the county, Stevens County, the public attorney or the prosecuting attorney understands that a constitutional compliance committee is literally going to start opening up these cans and open up and start identifying what the judiciary doesn't have all these powers that they've claimed. This is all going to come out, and they're running defense to make sure that these committees don't get stood up. They're actually going to go around and try to convince people, folks, as you start seeing this happen in your state, no, you don't have the authority to do that. The court has to do everything. You've got to come to us. We are the arbiters of all. We are the Oz of what we call America, folks. They're lying. Yeah. This is all deception. So we got 1 minute. And so let's actually turn to the document. And what we have is I chose to do this in alphabetical order. What I could have done, and probably what I should have done, was done this in sequence of a chronological order of when the states came on board. And I say that, why? Because I honestly think that as we do it that way, you'll actually start seeing how some of the states started aggrandizing what they were, you know, empowering and so forth. I mean, New Jersey was really short and to the point. And to be clear, because theirs was signed the 23rd, and Virginia was actually the 24th, and Virginia was signed the 23rd, you'll probably see why maybe New Jersey was a little bit shorter because they didn't have the time to even read what Virginia was doing. I think the rush was on to see who could actually meet first. And so New Jersey, hey, they're meeting. So then they instantly started. I mean, boom, boom. And when you look at the difference between New Jersey, it was very short and sweet and to the point. So we're going into break. And so we're going to dive into these commissions. And this is so important, folks, because this is giving these guys the keys to do what they did. And then when they came back from this convention, there were people in the ratification debates that said, these guys are, you know, it's scrupulous. They're shysters. They're charlatans. They exceeded their commission. They did things they had no power to do. And these right there, ooh, we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when the accusations flew out of the delegates in the ratification debates, most of the states, and actually, so this really only became a contention in a few states. Why? Why did these insinuations didn't come in Connecticut? Why in Delaware did they quickly convene the convention and ratify it? Why didn't they insinuate that these the best and brightest people that they sent as delegates to this convention, why didn't they impugn their character and call them a bunch of shysters? Because they weren't. According to the delegated power from Delaware. And actually, we're going to look through these, and we're going to find out that they, the anti-federalists in those states, either didn't exist or they weren't going to cross that line of actually making false accusations against these good men. The problem is that when you're corrupt, you're willing to go a little bit further and actually lie and impugn the good character. When we get into the Virginia debates, you will find that the Virginia debates had to solve the problem of whether the commission was violated or not. They were such charlatans. The leaders, and this is Patrick Henry. Patrick Henry said, this cannot even be an official, you know, convention until the challenge has been put down. Because he wanted to stop the convention. Therefore, they actually laid it out what the commission was, and they put it to the delegates to determine, was the delegates of Virginia in violation of the commission or not? This was pointed out by Paula Mayer, who talked about the ratification debates of the Constitution. So you don't see the procedures of this little brouhaha between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists who were literally trying to kill the convention before it started. So she had to point out that this actually happened in a couple of states. I don't think it happened in all of the states because the rancor and the desperation of Federalists or Anti-Federalists stopping the convention got a little bit worse and worse. So I'm not sure if it happened in New York, but she did point out Virginia was one of them. And if I look at the two people that probably had the greatest weight of the Anti-Federalists, the two people that were leading the charge against the convention and against the Constitution was Patrick Henry and George Mason. And so, you know, whether they really felt that they violated their commission or whether that was hyperbole, that's up to them. But as far as I see it, and as far as the rest of the delegates at that point in time, it was resolved because the judge or the jury was in. They did not exceed their commission. We will debate the Constitution. So the fact is that this is being resurrected. by supposedly a good organization that wants to sully the Constitution and actually give these anti-Constitution people any type of, you know, credibility just absolutely infuriates me. Yeah, maybe I'm taking it personal. I don't know. But you can't resurrect bad lies and get away with it other than the fact that there's been such time and they can go and say, oh, well, look at all of these personal comments, because that's what they did. They took letters and they never took anything out of the Federalist mouths during the debates. It was, yeah, these little, you know, hindsights maybe. Or this little language, like they have this little statement by Madison that, you know, maybe they did violate the commission, but actually what they cite with Madison out of the Federalist Papers, Madison defends to the death, as far as I see it, that they didn't. And so this is how they play with context as well. Why are they doing this? We need to just stop the discussion between the convention and the anti-conventionites. Right? Go home. We have a problem here, and the convention should not even be discussed. And as a matter of fact, my position is that there has to be a deficiency, a true deficiency identified before, and I would create the law, I would actually create the regulation before there's a discussion for a constitutional convention. Somebody needs to clearly articulate and lay out what is the deficiency with the Constitution that requires the urgency of us convening a convention instead of following the congressional path of getting our representatives and the representatives of other states to fix that deficiency, because we've got 28 amendments successfully through without ever having to take the resources and open up the next constitution for the federal government to control and manipulate. Oh, they don't want to let you know that. Because all things arising under this constitution, the federal government and the federal courts have jurisdiction. Which means that the convention arises under the constitution, which means that it only takes Congress or somebody in the federal government to pursue, you know, this is what we're going to do. Let the states actually stand up and say, hey, we're not going to let you do that because we have control. And then ergo, it goes straight into the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will rule that the federal government has control over it because it falls under their jurisdiction. They're the sovereigns in that court, and they're going to protect their interests. So why? Why even have these conversations? And unfortunately, there's such deception on both sides, because, you know, it's a good boondoggle, you know, for those guys that get to fly out to the States and they get paid to do that, and they get their name out there, just being out there in the fight. It's good exposure. It's great press for those people who kind of, you know, see the way they're twisting it. Does this make sense, Tammy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, the whole point is, because we can prove that there is no deficiency that the Constitutional Convention can fix. We have proven time and time again, when it comes to federal usurpations, when the federal government has violated the Constitution, an amendment is not the proper process of engaging, which is why Thomas Jefferson and James Madison had no desire. It was a non-starter. You don't need a convention to go after them. We actually have to interpose and force them into compliance. That is the process. So why are we're just locked? Right. We're just locked in this waste of time. So I'm not going to waste any more time on it now, because it is a waste of time. And you need to start communicating to your legislature. Quit wasting time talking about a convention. Start interposing. Start working together. And so let's talk about these things that aren't constitutional. Get them stopped. Anyway. All right. I'll stop.
I like that.
I'll stop.
Quit wasting time talking about an intervention.
Yes.
Or about a convention.
And what a waste of time it was for me to do this. Okay, so we're going to start off with Connecticut. And so I'm going to point out certain things that are worthy of highlighting as we kind of read these things. But what I want to do is I want to go down to be it enacted. It's not highlighted, but it's the third paragraph after the Connecticut Act electing and empowering that primary highlighted line. You got be it enacted by the governor. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
On Connecticut. Okay. Before you read that, I want to point out something. Most people, because we just talked about the court being the court of decision. What does it say here? Be it enacted by the governor, council, and representatives in general court assembled. In other words, the legislature identified themselves as a court. But they weren't going to deal with the petty cases of justice. They were actually above that. That's why they created a little court where people could just spend their time listening to cases but by using law and fact, determine justice for two parties to resolve their controversy. Okay? So every state legislature, my friends, is a court. And they have the power to create the law or undo the law and administer redress for any problems regarding the Constitution, regarding government, and so forth. And so I've already mentioned before this case up in Hot Springs in Wyoming. Hot Springs County, Wyoming, a guy went to court and the judge basically denied this guy this ability to redefine his property so that he wouldn't have to pay the tax. Well, hey, you know, this judge being the guy that wanted to make sure he protected the revenue stream coming into the court, didn't care about actual justice or whether this person had a right of redress or not, basically just denied him. He made a personal decision. And oh, by the way, was this in front of a court, I should say, a jury? In other words, the controversy was well over $20, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm giving you this to go to those people up in Hot Springs. So the 7th Amendment and the 14th Amendment say no law, no state shall make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. The 7th Amendment basically says in any common law case where the controversy is greater than $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. That was a common law case. It was a property case. It was a tax case. Basic common law.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, was this man afforded the opportunity to try his case to seek justice in a case with a jury? No. A judge made a decision.
No, I love it.
And therefore, he said, I'm not satisfied with this. And so he went and petitioned his legislatures at the county. The county commissioners redressed it and actually requalified and gave him the redress he was seeking. That pissed off the court. And as a matter of fact, as far as mm-hmm. I'm concerned, the county commissioners should actually demand that the sheriff arrest that judge for violating this man's constitutional rights. The problem is the guy didn't know that he had a constitutional right to have a trial by jury. But the judge should have known. And the judge didn't afford that to him because the judge knew he was going to get money out of this guy. That's what he wanted to do, and that's what he did. And how dare you challenge the court? Now, I'm going to be out here on this. I'm going to talk really soft because I don't want them to hear. You realize that I am probably public enemy number one with judges in our court system, the people that are embracing this unconstitutional power that they've assumed and are trying to enforce. Lawyers and judges who hear what I have to say. I am basically dismantling their ivy tower. I'm dismantling their huge castle that they've built for themselves to rule us. They don't have these authorities. We are a Republican form of government, folks. And as soon as you start waking up to this, then we'll start realizing that they have the responsibility of providing justice between two parties. And they have to be held to the law, not how they interpret the law. If they can't find the truth of what the law is, then it is their job to basically put aside the case and say, legislature, you need to go to the states if it's a federal constitution thing. and say, hey, the Supreme Court goes, hey, Congress, you need to go to the states because this part of the Constitution is kind of ambiguous. We need them to tell us how that's to be defined. They need to go back and look at the ratification basis because we can't find it. So they need to go back and look at that, and then they need to determine if, you know, they want to give us an amendment or what have you to help define how we move forward in providing justice in this particular case. They just can't assume because they want to get the job done. They can't create the law. They can't redefine things. It has to go back to the parties. If there's ambiguity regarding the contract, they must go to the parties of the compact. This is why they have to go to Congress to basically say, Congress, you need to go back to the parties. Now you start seeing, you know, how this is supposed to happen. But instead, everybody, well, I'm just going to assume the power and I become the grand poobah in deciding this. And then my name goes next to case law of, you know, creating this new form of law. And that's what a lot of lawyers want to do. They want to see their names go down in the annals of history as the person. They call mm-hmm. that law after this lawyer, the Levin Law. And that's what they do. And my friends, this is all feeding their egos and they're way out of control. So I don't mind being public enemy number one. The facts are the facts. They don't have the power. They don't have the authority. They can't prove that they do. They know that, which is why they're keeping and suppressing, gag ordering anybody and everybody when the truth really gets close to getting out. So, and you know what? What's kind of frustrating, because I look at, you know, the show and our rankings, and we're a top 10 ranked show during this hour. I can't understand why we're not the number one ranked show, other than the fact that people are so ingratiated in the problem du jour. Oh, is Trump going to cut his nails? Is somebody going to kill Trump? I mean, whatever, you know, the paradigm of the people are, they just want to know what's happening right now. Who cares? Tyranny is happening right now at such a level and magnitude that it is going to kill us. They're pushing us off the ledge. You've got to start understanding how to stop it, and you've got to get involved. So why isn't this show number one? And, you know, because I actually offend people, because I, you know, don't give passes to the myopic organizations. They're those organizations that want to obviate the importance of us uniting on the Constitution. So anyway, back to this, because I went down this rat hole on this one line. And so go ahead and read the paragraph that's highlighted with the green. Go ahead and read that whole paragraph. Thank you so much.
Okay, the whole paragraph, not just the green?
Yeah, the whole paragraph, because they're going to identify the names and all of that, yeah.
Okay, that the Honorable William S. Johnson, Roger Sherman, and Oliver Ellsworth, Esquire, be, and they hereby are, appointed delegates to attend the, what's that stand for, the convention in our, requested to proceed to the city of Philadelphia for that purpose without delay, and the said delegates, and in case of sickness and or accident, such one or more of them, I shall actually attend the said convention, is and are hereby authorized and empowered to represent this state therein and to confer with such delegates appointed by the several states for the purposes mentioned in the said act of Congress, that may be present and duly empowered to act in said convention and to discuss upon such alterations and provisions agreeable to the general principles of republican government as they shall think proper to render the federal constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the union. And they are further directed, pursuant to said act of Congress, to report such alterations and provisions as may be agreed to by a majority of the United States represented in convention to the Congress of the United States and to the General Assembly of the state.
Okay, so what's
in the upper house?
Yeah, so let me ask you this now. You've read it. I'm going to read it back to you. Just the highlighted, underlined, black and red text. Okay. For the purposes mentioned in the said Act of Congress that may be present and duly empowered, in other words, these delegates may be present and duly empowered to act in the said convention and to discuss upon such alterations and provisions agreeable to the general principles of Republican government, not the Articles of Confederation, of Republican government, as they shall think proper to render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union. Did they say to limit it to only making amended recommendations, don't rewrite anything? Did they contain them, or did they give them a blank check to say, go do what you think is important and what would fix their problem?
As long as it's agreeable to the general principles of the Republican government.
Yes. And so that's exactly what they labored over. And they actually improved and created a Republican form of government that created checks and balances unlike any other. They created such a superior Republican form of government that every state in the Union ended up adopting that basic framework of having a separate judiciary that's limited to only hearing cases and has no power over law. That only the people that have power over law are our representatives, and that the executive would have a little power in vetoing law, but could be overturned by our sovereigns, by our legislatures, to say, we are overturning your veto because it's that important, that who we represent is far more important than you and what you want. Now, I do believe that there needs to be an amendment to the U.S. Constitution that would basically allow the President of the United States and the Supreme Court to review a law that is being presented and challenge it, that the law must actually go through what I would call a true litmus test. Is this law an accurate derivative of the enumerated objects within the Constitution, such as the Civil Rights Act, such as the American Disabilities Act, such as the Affordable Care Act, and on and on and on and on. Because every single one of these acts are not derivatives of any enumerated power. In other words, those acts should have actually been vetoed, and the president, by doing this, by creating this, to place it in veto for full review, that it must be a derived power. It must be directly derived from an enumerated object in the Constitution. Ergo, the veto becomes a permanent, you can't overturn this. Sorry, because this is unconstitutional. Period. I mean, so giving the president the ability to kill unconstitutional laws should only be, you know, stating the obvious. But having a process to do that. As a matter of fact, I would even say, screw the court. At least the way the court is made up today. I say that another amendment needs to actually change the court makeup from just basically having an arbitrary, you know, couple, seven, nine, whatever, that each state would appoint a court or a justice to the court. That we would have 50 justices on the court, and that the president would actually appoint the chief justice or two chief justices, an alternate, for tiebreaker purposes. If we have an odd number, then we would need two, right? Because an odd number with one chief justice would, like 51, let's say Greenland becomes the next state, having a single chief justice would be inadequate. We would need an alternate chief justice to ensure that the two federal chief justices, the alternate and the primary, would be able to break a tie, not cause a tie. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Just for tie-breaking purposes. So in other words, they're really more of the you know, the guy that kind of keeps the decorum right and makes sure, you know, that we're abiding by the Constitution, more of an administrator of the court, as well as basically the decider of a tie. So anyway, but that way, then it's actually going to the states. Or the other option is, instead of going out to this new framed, you know, 50-judge panel of representation in the court by the states, instead it should go to the state legislatures to determine is this a violation of the Constitution? Because ultimately the states are the arbiters. And I would have no problem if the states were the ones appointing justices, they would make sure that these justices were actually protecting the state's rights and their state sovereignty. The reason we don't have justices in the Supreme Court since the early days, because we were divided over slavery, and the justices that were being appointed were coming from the South. They were all in favor, and they made sure that they were going to protect slavery. I don't know if you knew that. That's one of the reasons why, you know, that we were never seeing any breaks from the court system. As a matter of fact, when we saw the Dred Scott case, where Dred Scott was actually released from his slavery by 12 jurors, white jurors of Missouri. They said, you're no longer a slave. The Supreme Court stepped in, this Southern slave-oriented Supreme Court, still to that day in the 1860s. Or 50s, still to that day, they said, no, you can't be a slave, and nor can you become a citizen of the United States. So that's how long the court had been biased against blacks and slavery, because that's how we were divided. That was the issue. And so the point is that when we allow that to happen, but had we actually had real representation, the courts never would have done that. In other words, had we had a Republican form of government, because the president is chosen by the states as well. If the court was selected by the states, I think that right there would have preserved that Republican form and the checks and balances of agendas being able to really get a foothold within that judiciary, and would have kept, I believe, the legislature and the executive better in check in preserving the sovereignty and dignity of the states, period. But you know what? I could be completely wrong, but I think that this is a conversation that we, the people, really need to have, and I think that the best minds and the brightest minds could sit down and argue through this, and because I think the evidence is so clear, we cannot afford to have permanent tenure for court justices. We cannot afford to continue down this path of allowing the courts to exist the way they do, by giving them permanent tenure and allowing them to basically represent the institution where they come from instead of the states and people, because it's their job to protect the sovereignty of the states as well as the rigidity of the enumerated objects within that Constitution. They're to defend that Constitution, not defend the federal government. And instead, they've been defending agendas, and when the federal government got on board with their agenda, then they defended the federal government. But nothing passed through them, and they've been able to obviate, you know, the Republican form of government into the judiciary. This is how it's all got messed up, folks. If you really look at the greatest culprits of undermining our Constitution, the courts. The courts have been that big evil body doing that. Anyway, we're out of time. Thank you so much for your time. Hopefully you're going away this time with a better assurance, right?
I feel like I understand a little better. Yep.
Great. Awesome. Then maybe you can share this show with a lot of your friends so that they can start seeing, you know, what they're up against, because you have to start creating county constitution compliance committees so you can start calling out these county judges and these county prosecutors, those in the judiciary that are actually basically ruining your state and taking away your liberties and so forth. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.